Welcome to Slug Magazine's weekly podcast, Slug Soundwaves. Since 1989, Slug has curated content that highlights the best of Utah's alternative and underrepresented music, arts, events, and community subcultures. Here on Soundwaves, you'll hear artists speak for themselves, telling stories about their work and why they do it. If Slug has benefited you or someone you love, consider contributing to sustain our existence. Head to slugmag.com/donate to join our community of donors. Slug Magazine's Brew Stillery is a local beer and spirits festival, and it's been celebrating Utah's brewers and distillers since 2018. This all-ages event has something for everyone to enjoy, offering tastings of local beer and spirits, and also featuring local food trucks, artisans, and music. Don't miss Slug Mag's Brew Stillery 2024 on Saturday, June 15th at Art Space City Center from 2 to 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now through 24tix.com.
Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves.
The thing, the big significance, is reflected in every action.
Parallax is a hardcore band that was popular in the early 2000s during a metal movement in the Utah Valley. While its members shifted, the group was made up of five guys from Provo. After touring in the late 90s, the band was inching over the line of huge success and producing their first album. In 2005, the band's lead singer, Blake Donner, passed away suddenly in a tragic hiking accident. Three other close friends of the band were with him and also died. After Donner's death, Parallax released the album they recorded with him called Mediums and Messages. In this week's episode, I sat down with the band's guitarist, Elliot Sechrist, and the drummer, Charles Bogus, to talk about an upcoming show they'll be playing those songs at. It's a Crucial Fest showcase, which will reunite other inactive bands to join for one night only. Crucial Fest's director, Jerome Bischoff, will join Parallax on bass, and Kelly Green from Fight the Future will sing the lyrics Donner wrote. The show is happening May 25th at Soundwell. Visit slugmag.com to find out where to get tickets.
My name's Elliot Sechrist. I play guitar in Parallax.
My name's Charles Bogus. I play drums in Parallax.
We have a guitar player, Mike Collins. Jerem from Crucial Fest is filling on bass for us. And Kelly Green from Fight the Future is filling in for Blake, our singer who passed away.
I mean, it's hardcore music. If you're familiar with that music, hardcore, metalcore, it wouldn't probably be anything super foreign. All those songs were written in the early 2000s at a time when we were all super dedicated to that and only that. Put a lot of effort into kind of making the songs as crazy as possible, I guess. And so I guess it's kind of a lot to digest. A lot of parts, longer songs than I think you're maybe typically used to in hardcore.
The band we got compared to the most, I guess, in reviews was Misery Signals, of which I never really listened to, but if somebody's looking for a reference point, I guess that might be one. When I was like 11, I had a kid on a bus ask me if I wanted to come over and listen to music, and he showed me a bunch of heavy hardcore and metal bands, and I was just immediately hooked. I don't know why, but so been into it ever since. I guess playing it my whole life. I don't listen to a lot on my own time. I check, like, you know, what new bands are doing, give it a quick listen, but then I listen to a bunch of other stuff now. I learned how to play guitar in the band. When we started, I had no idea how to play guitar. And all the theory and everything I learned over the years, the songs just got crazier and turned into what they turned into. I guess I was listening to a ton of, I don't know, like Hydrahead Records stuff back in that time. A lot of Converge and Botch and stuff like that. Some of that discordant angular riffage kind of comes out, I guess. As for now, it's just going to be fun to play the songs. After, I guess the last time we played them was 10 years ago. And then before that, it was 10 years or something like that. It's been a long time.
Limits,
I think Parallax had been a band for a few years before I met Elliot, and they were looking for a drummer. Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a time where we were really, really passionate about it and had the time to dedicate to it, to make it what we wanted, you know? And I think as far as today goes, I think I'll always be kind of nostalgic for that, just because that was a really special time, I think, in terms of like collaboration and as a artist, I guess, or a musician, in terms of expressing ourselves. Like, I kind of compare everything I've done since then to those times, I guess.
And heavy music's just the funnest to play live, so
yeah,
it's just it's a good release to get on stage and just let it all out. Like he said, we had been playing a number of years before we met, and oddly enough, both our bands, both Utah Valley bands, we never had any issue like band-wise between the bands, but for some reason all our fans would like act like our bands hated each other.
Yeah, so there's like a weird kind
of... There's like this weird beef that we weren't part of, really.
Yeah.
And one day Charles walked up, because he knew we were looking for a drummer, walked up to me at a show and asked if he could try out, and I was like, yeah, sure. Because I was like, oh, I thought you guys like hated us. But it was all just weird rumor stuff. I don't know. And then all the other people... I guess before Charles, I started the band in high school with a couple people, and Blake wasn't even somebody we were going to ask to be in the band. He just insisted when he found out that we were starting a band, and so I was like, fine, yeah, you can sing. All the other guys, you know, for a while, early 2000s, Provo scene was huge. Every show we played was like 200 plus kids or something. And so the rotating, all the members we've added and came and went, they were just all good friends from Provo, people I lived with and stuff. I lived with Mikey for a long time. So when his buddy Trey played with us, when he quit, Mike was the shoe-in. The band on the album, that's like the solid like
core group.
Yeah, lineup. We had two other drummers before Charles. So it was me, Blake, a kid named Brandon Kennedy on bass. We started with a guy named Rick Brimhall on drums, and then a guy named Sean Gilchrist filled in because Rick's parents were super Mormon and told him he couldn't play in the band. I think it was because I gave him a death metal CD with a disemboweled Jesus on the cover when his parents found it. So they made him quit, but he came back later. And the only reason he left was he was going to go on a mission, so that's when we got Charles. That's why we started the band, was just to play this one show. We were still in high... Well, Blake had already graduated high school, but the rest of the band, we were still in high school, and it was the bands playing were One King Down, like a straight-edge hardcore band from Buffalo or somewhere, and then Stretch Armstrong, really like melodic, positive, poppy, hardcore punk stuff, and then Diecast, which is a band I don't like, never liked, but it was a huge deal, and the promoter... knowing that I had been jamming with people, called and said, he asked if I had any songs, and we hadn't written a full song at all. And he said we could play if we get a set together. And we wrote like three songs, and then it did an Inside Out cover. We did No Spiritual Surrender and played that show. I had no intention of continuing. I just wanted to play a show. And then everybody was like, when's practice? I was like, what? We're practicing? We played the show. That was probably like 98, maybe. We all got along great. Blake was always a pain in everybody's ass, just being high energy, intense jokester. But other than that, like, we all got along great. Touring, we never really gotten any fights ever, I don't think.
We were all like very much so on the same page, and I guess had the same goals. We've stayed friends ever since, so.
I guess the dynamic was that, like, we would just write as crazy as we could write and then not even worry about Blake, and he would do all the lyrics, we did all the music, and it just, like, it came together perfect always.
How many seconds left? How many years? How long remains until everything I've known, everything I've loved, anyone I've touched disappears? There will come a day when the world will never have known this face, this name, this body, this brain. Is it any surprise that sometimes I'm short of breath, that I find solace in being alone, where safe and protected with armor selected to deflect the world and to maintain control, I can lay quiet and restrained, immobilized by a threat that won't fade.
I mean, it was terrible, you know, four friends dying the same day, so I don't love talking about it, but the aftermath of that, I guess, like the amount of emotional baggage that I feel just relearning these songs for the show, like, opened the floodgates, like, of stuff I had repressed or just not thought about in years, and so, you know, it's gonna be intense to get on a stage and play that stuff again.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to go through something like that when we did it, of course it affects us, you know, it did affect us a lot then, and it still does. I think those, like, feelings and memories are always kind of right under the surface, you know, and anytime the band come ups, they kind of come back to the surface, and you kind of have to go through all of that again, you know, and I think it's the same for a lot of our friends and fans, I guess, people that listen to the music, you know, so I don't know, I think those feelings are kind of always there, always be part of it.
Every moment counts me closer to zero, and I am desperate. Desperate to hold life in an embrace instead of at arm's reach. I am recast and adapted by all.
It really felt like we were like on the cusp of potentially becoming a big, relatively big name in hardcore. Like, we had been speaking to Kurt Ballou before then, to the guitarist of Converge and, like, you know, hardcore producer extraordinaire, but we decided not to go with him for that album, even though I think it was an option. And then, like, we were getting great reviews. We had gotten so many of our 7-inches and demo CDs out across the country. The anarchist collective Crime Think, they would hand out our demos with their books and orders for their stuff. So I think total of just hand printed CDs, we got like over 1,000 out across the country, and I don't know.
Yeah, we were just ready to, like, getting ready to release that album. We had recorded it, I think, earlier that year, yeah, or sometime in 2004. And we were just getting all the details wrapped up with artwork and stuff like that right when that happened with Blake. And so, yeah, I felt like we had a lot of momentum going, and it kind of happened at sort of a crazy time, you know. We tried to kind of keep it going a little bit once the record came out, just because we had put so much work into it. We wanted to get it out there and tour it around and stuff. So we kind of did that for about a year before we sort of kind of went our separate ways at that point.
Yeah. It didn't feel like we were doing justice to it by continuing. So we just, or at least in my mind, that's what I felt. So I felt like we weren't going to be as good without Blake. So I quit. I mean, one of the biggest things, besides, you know, our music being crazy, is Blake's lyrics. And nothing's changed in my mind. Like, politically, like, what we talk about, I still believe 100%. But I wouldn't want to do a disservice to Blake's lyrics by trying to explain them on here. I'd just suggest, if somebody's interested, to find them online and read them. They're still as important today as they were when we put it out. Various issues in it, you know, growing up in, you know, Mormon monoculture. We talk about that a lot. And yeah, check out Parallax lyrics, because they're just as wild as the music. Kelly has the tough job of having to learn Blake's endless lyrics. He doesn't really repeat much. They're just long essays, essentially. And so she's got a lot of lyrics to memorize, but it'll be cool. Now there's so much drum editing. A lot of bands don't even use like a real bass either. They just get like a nice sounding, like, you know, some big metal artist software of their bass tone and just like enter it in MIDI. So our songs are like all about 7 minutes long and chaotic as fuck. A lot of riffs, and Charles had to do it in one take to tape. And then there was no drum editing, or at least we didn't do any drum editing to it. Couldn't even move hits or anything.
Not like they do today.
Yeah, not like it is now. Guitar tracking's the same. I like to have a mic on a cab, so I still do it the same. But I know a lot of people do just like direct in through like a like impulse response and, like, you know, do it all just into the box rather than even miking anything up. But we've always kind of done things pretty natural on our recordings. Yeah, it was way different. So the mediums and messages and like a couple recordings before that we did with Andy Patterson. His studio's our home away from home. I guess even crazier, our first recording was done on a machine that recorded to zip discs. and didn't even have a screen. And we recorded in a guy's apartment in Provo. And it, I think to get like the five songs, it was like a zip disc per song or something. That's a funny recording, but I'm glad the technology's where it's at now. It means I can mess up and be like, just move that one a little bit.
When we would start bands back then, it was never really with the idea of making an album. Like Elliot said, when he first started Parallax, it was just to play one show, you know? I think shows were the main thing back then. And you'd start a band with your friends and play shows, and a lot of bands would never end up making a record. It wasn't as accessible as it is now. So when we got the opportunity to do like a full-length album with Andy, I think we booked like a week or 2 weeks with Andy. It was a big deal for us, you know, and a lot of prep went into it. And it's, I think, a lot different now with the streaming services and YouTube and stuff. It seems like a lot of bands have full-length albums out and music videos out and stuff before they even play a live show, if they play live, you know. So it's definitely changed a lot.
But yeah, kind of flipped on its head. I'm extremely proud of it. It's still, like, I got a degree in jazz composition like way after this band was over, and going back now knowing theory in and out and relearning these songs, they're still absolutely insane songs. Like, I was definitely playing over my head a little bit playing the songs. Now we're playing them slower, but I'm playing them so much tighter. They're easier to play. They were such hard songs to play back then. We were like playing right on the edge of our ability. But yeah, I always bring this band up and show it to new friends and try to get people to listen to it. But I think the show will just be a one-off thing. Charles and I might send riffs across the country and get, like, you know, some project going eventually, since the technology is so easy to share music now. I'm just excited to play this one-off show. I hope a lot of people come and sing along, take some of the load off of Kelly. Yeah. Hopefully we don't mess up in front of a bunch of other good bands.
Yeah.
So Dent was our song that went out to our friends, and it's about like maintaining hope in a violent, sometimes sick world. So it's just like a dialogue to our friends talking about how they keep hope alive and they keep us inspired. It's like a love letter to all of our friends, basically. Like, the lyrics are just directly speaking to everybody that keeps us inspired.
You're about to hear Dent from our album Mediums and Messages in its entirety.
We are not the same. when I was up in front of the judge for my arraignment, the judge said my biggest problem with this case is that this guy, this current person we're judging, ran from the police for a month. And I if I could have spoken, of course I wasn't allowed to speak, I would have said it's been a lot more than a month. I've been running from you people all my life. All my life. And I'm gonna keep running.
Come out to the show on May 25th at the Soundwell. I'm sure if people bought pre-sale tickets, Jerem would stop having a heart attack too. So,
yeah. I mean, I would say too, follow Elliot. He's playing in a band called Race Trader these days. You keep up with him on social media.
Yeah.
I've got, I'm doing tattooing now. So we've all got stuff going on.
Yeah.
But as far as the band goes, it's really just this show.
If you enjoyed this episode of Soundwaves, please take 60 seconds to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Mary Culbertson, and promoted by the Slug Magazine editorial staff. Be sure to check out this month's issue of Slug. You can find a copy any place cool or at slugmag.com. KRCL was founded in 1979 to bring a more diverse voice to Salt Lake City and surrounding areas. KRCL is community funded and supported, which allows diverse commercial free programming that varies from indie to hip hop, blues to bluegrass, metal, punk, indigenous, and bilingual programs. Every weekday at 6 p.m., KRCL's Radioactive brings you grassroots activism and civic engagement with punk rock farming and live local music on Fridays. Tune in to KRCL at 90.9 FM. Stream at krcl.org or download the app on the App Store.
Did you enjoy this episode of Slug Soundwaves? You and the local community can continue to enjoy Slug Mag's content for free, but please consider making a one-time or ongoing contribution. Each contribution, no matter the amount, helps support Slug's creation of thoughtful media coverage on SLC's music, arts, events, and community subcultures. Head over to slugmag.com/donate to make your contribution today.